Hello everyone. In this lecture, we are going to have a brief discussion about causal inference in computer sciences. Causal inference, this may sound like a new term to you, but actually the meaning is very simple. Causal inference means to find out the cause and effect relationship. In computer sciences, especially in economics and political science and also sometimes in sociology, researchers are particularly interested in the cause and effect relationships. For example, in labor economics, people are often interested in the effect of education on income. So in this case, we're interested in the cause and effect relationship between, say, your education and wage. In education economics, people are often interested in the impact of class size on a student's academic course. So in this case, we are interested in the cause and effect relationship between class size, usually measured by the student-teachers ratio, so the number of students divided by the number of teachers in a school or in school district, and the test score. In international trade, people are often interested in the effect of openness to trade, or trade openness on the economic growth. So the trade openness is usually measured by the share of import plus exports in the total GDP, and economic growth is measured usually by GDP growth. So in this case, we are interested in finding out the cause and effect relationship between this GDP share of exports and imports and the GDP growth. And in political science and in political economy, researchers are often interested in, say, the cause and effect relationship between, say, democracy and economic growth. So does democracy have economic growth? So this is a long lasting question. So in this case, researchers are interested in finding out the cause and effect relationship between, the democracy, there's some kind of index, an index for the degree of democracy's growth rate of different countries. The cause and effect relationship between this kind of a democratic index and democratic score and the GDP growth. So in this lecture, we are going to introduce the very basic framework and some basic concepts that modern social science researchers have used to discover the cause and effect relationships.
So people speak of causal relationships or cause and effect relationships even in everyday life. For example, when we say college education increases earning, we are talking about a cause and relationship between college degree or college education and people's income, people's earning. Sometimes people even express this cause and effect relationship in a more detailed way. They will say that college education will increase earning by 30%. So in this statement, they not only claim that there's a cause and effect relationship between college degree and income, and they even try to quantify, try to give a number of that cause and effect relationship, try to estimate the magnitude of this cause and effect relationship. Sometimes, or actually in many situations, such a statement about cause and effect relationship is actually just based on observations that people with a college degree usually earn more than people without. So I think that phenomenon is there in terms of all countries. I'm not saying that everyone with a college degree is earning more than everyone without it. I'm saying on average. So on average, it's very common to find that there's a positive correlation between education level and earnings. So sometimes people just claim the cause and effect relationship based on comparing two groups of people. Group of people with college degree, group of people without college degree, by comparing their earning, comparing their wage, they come to the conclusion that college degree increases earning. But such a simple comparison sometimes may be misleading. So let's look at the following example about cause and effect relationship. So let's ask a very simple, even a little bit silly question. Do hospitals improve people's health condition? So in order to answer this question, let's look at a very simple data set. So this set is a United States data set. It was collected by National Health Interview Survey. We just look at two variables, two things. First is hospital visit, and second is health status. So hospital visit is asked in the following way. Okay? So in the survey, the question about hospital visit is asked in the following way. During past year, past 12 months, have you stayed in a hospital overnight? So the answer is yes and no. We can use this to identify recent hospital visitors. So if the answer to this question is yes, we identify this interviewee, this respondent, as a hospital visitor. If the answer is no, we identify this respondent as a non-hospital visitor. The question concerning health status was being asked as follows. Would you say your health in general is excellent, very good, good, fair, poor? So it's like five-level evaluation, self-evaluation. Five levels, excellent, very good, good, fair, and poor. So let's summarize this data set. So we can make a very simple summary statistics of the information on these two variables. So basically, as we said, the first survey question gives us a variable about hospital visit. So we use the answer to this question, yes or no, to divide our sample into two groups. We call them hospital group and non-hospital group. Basically, if the answer to this question is yes, that means this respondent has spent at least one night in hospital over the past year. We put him or her into this hospital group. If the answer to the previous question about hospital visiting is no, we put him or her into this non-hospital group. So you can see that in total, there are almost 3,000 people in this hospital group, and more than 90,000 interviewees are in this non-hospital group. Then, for each of these two groups, we compute the so-called average health status. Remember that our self-health evaluation question, which is your health in general is excellent, very good, good, fair, or poor, five levels. Now we assign numbers to these five levels. Basically, we assign number five to excellent health condition. Excellent. If the answer is excellent, would be number five. Very good, four. Good, three. Fair, two. Poor, one. Okay. So the larger the number, the healthier the interviewee is. So for this hospital group, average health status in this number from 1 to 5 is about 3.21. On the other hand, the non-hospital group, the average health status in number is 3.93. So the difference in average, the difference in average health status between non-hospital group and hospital group is 0.72. So this data simply tells us, on average, the group of people who haven't spent a night in hospital for the past year, on average, are healthier than the group of people who have spent at least one night at hospital in the past year. So basically, no hospital group is healthier than the hospital group. So this is a comparison between two averages. So can we go step forward and claim that this average comparison implies some causal relationship? In other words, based on this comparison between these two averages, we find that no hospital group is healthier than hospital group. So can we say that it tells us hospitals make people sicker? Of course, it is not impossible that hospital may have a negative impact on people's health. But the problem is that from the simple comparison between these two averages, it is strange to integrate this average comparison as a cause and effect relationship. The main reason is that people going to hospital are usually less healthy in first place. So the hospital group and non-hospital group, they are very different before receiving medical treatment in the hospital. So basically, the initial health condition in this non-hospital group is significantly better than those in the hospital group. People go to hospital because they are sick. So the lesson we learn from this simple example is that if these two groups are very different, then we cannot integrate a comparison between average of these two groups as a cause and effect relationship. Well, in other words, if you want to find out the cause and effect relationship or causal effect, we should not compare hospital group with non-hospital group. Some people will say that we should not compare apple with oranges. here, apple and oranges means two different things. So what are the main difference in this case? In this case, the main difference is the initial health condition. Hospital group has a worse initial health condition than the no-hospital group. So it's not fair to compare them. This comparison may not tell you the effect of hospital. This comparison may just reflect the initial difference in the health status. Okay, in general, in order to find out cause and effect relationship by comparing every the two groups, we need to make sure that the two groups are similar to each other. In other words, if you compare apples to apples, if you want to find out the causal relationship between two things or two variables, X and Y, for example, in previous case, X is hospitalization or medical treatment, Y is the health condition. If you want to find out the causal relationship between two variables by comparing every to Y between two groups with different X. Okay. So, if Y is health condition, X is hospitalization, so comparing the health condition between groups that visit the hospital and the group that did not visit the hospital. If Y is earning, X is college degree, then comparing average Y between two groups with different X means comparing the average earning between a group of people with a college degree and without college degree. Okay. So if X is openness to trade, or Y is economic growth, so this means comparing the difference between comparing the GDP growth between two groups of countries, one group with a high trade share in total GDP, the other group has a low trade share in total GDP. So if we want to find out the cause and effect relationship between two variables by comparing the average of Y between two groups with different X, then we must make sure that other factors, except for X, are on average the same, or at least are on average very similar in these two groups. In other words, if you want to draw cause and effect inference, some conclusion about cause and effect relationship from comparing the two averages, then we must make sure that the only difference between these two groups is in X. Except for X, all other factors are on average the same. So apparently, our previous example does not satisfy this. Right? In our previous example, Y is a health status, X is this hospitalization, visit the hospital in the past year, or did not visit the hospital in the past year. Of course, X is different between these two groups. Right? X means hospitalization, so in the first group, they visited the hospital in the past year. In the second group, they did not visit the hospital in the past year. So X is of course different between these two groups. But besides X, apart from X, there are some other factors very different between these two groups. And the most important of them is the initial health condition. So you can see, for this example, this red card does not satisfy. Right? This red card says all other factors, except for X, should be on average the same or similar in these two groups. But in the previous example, factors like initial health condition is apparently different between the hospitalized group and the non-hospitalized group. That's why, in the previous example, we cannot interpret the comparison between the averages as a cause and effect relationship. Because this comparison may just reflect the difference in other factors. Okay. In order to make sure that the difference in the average between these two groups is coming from X, and this difference in Y is caused by X, we have to make sure that X is the only difference between these two groups. All other factors, except for X, are on average the same. Okay, therefore, because this red card is so important, because we want to make sure all other factors are on average the same, or at least on average very similar between two groups. The ideal scenario for causal inference is a randomized control trial. Randomized control trial is just a more precise way of describing an experiment. So the ideal scenario to find out a cause and effect relationship is by conducting experiments, or more precisely, conducting a randomized controlled trial. So in randomized controlled trial, or sometimes we will call its short name RCT, randomized controlled trial, RCT. So in RCT, subjects are randomly assigned to two groups. One of them is called a treatment group, the other is called a control group. The treatment group receive a treatment. So, for example, we can understand this group as a treatment group, this group and the control group. Okay? Those in the treatment group receive a treatment, for example, medical care in hospital, or in the example like the class size and the student teachers, class size and students and performance, we can send the treatment as a small class and the control group as a regular class. So in the example of a college degree, if you have a college degree on earnings, we can think the treatment group is the group of people who have a college degree, and the control group is a group of people who do not have a college degree. So here, important thing is a random assignment. Subjects are randomly assigned to a treatment group and a control group. It is this random assignment that makes sure other factors are on average the same between the treatment group and the control group. So this red part is guaranteed in this randomized control trial, RCT, by this random assignment. Random assignment. Sorry, it's a typo. Random assignment, not randomly. Okay? Random assignment. So you randomly assign subjects into two groups, then on average, these two the subjects in these two groups on average are similar to each other. I'm not saying that every subject in the treatment group must be the same as every subject in the control group. I'm talking about on average. Because you randomly assign subjects into two groups. This random assignment will make sure that subjects in these two groups are on average the same. So you probably have learned this idea from your science classes in your school or high school. So let's have a quick review of a very, very simple experiment or randomized control trial in science or in biology.
Okay.
So suppose in your middle school science class, the teacher asks you to study the effect of water on the sprouting of seeds. Okay. So, in order to find out effects of water, the role of water in process of seed sprouting, probably we conduct the following experiment. Say you have 30 seeds from the same species, like, for example, the seeds of pea, and you randomly pick up 15 of them and put them in pot 1, and the rest of them put in pot 2. Okay? And you give water every day to pot 1, and you not give water to pot 2. After 1 week, you find that, for example, so I just made up those numbers, just for example. In the first pot, 4 out of 15 seeds sprouted, while in pot 2, only 4 out of 15 seeds sprouted. So during this experiment, you need to ensure that the only difference between pot 1 and pot 2 is that pot 1 received water, pot 2 did not receive water. All other factors should be on average the same. Basically, pot 1 and pot 2, these two containers must have the same size, must be made of the same material, contain the same soil, put in the same place. You cannot put pot 1 in your kitchen and pot 2 in the RP. You have to put them side by side in the same place. And also, the seeds should be randomly assigned to pot 1 and pot 2. This random assignment will guarantee seeds in these two pots are on average very similar. Similar means similar in their weight, in their size. And I'm not saying that every seed in pot 1 must be the same as every seed in pot 2. I'm talking about on average. So the random assignment will make sure that on average, seeds in these two pots have similar weight, similar size. You cannot deliberately pick up those bigger seeds and put them in pot 1 and leave those small seeds in pot 2. You cannot do that. You have to randomly assign seeds into these two pots. So this randomization process makes sure that the only difference between these two pots is water and the water. All the factors are on average the same. So randomized control trial is an ideal scenario for finding out causal relationship. So the scientists also conduct randomized control trials. Of course, there are some challenges when scientists want to conduct randomized control trials. One challenge is financial cost. Usually, experiments in social science will cost a lot of money. And the other concern is about ethical issues. Because if you want to use human beings as subjects of your experiment, there will be some moral considerations. You have to pass some moral examination, moral reviews of your experiment's proposal. So in following, we will present two examples. First, we will present one example that uses RCT, randomized control trial, to study a topic in social sciences, basically in studying relationship between class size and a student's academic performance. So if people are studying education economics. And then, we realize that RCT, randomized control trial, is often not feasible for social scientists. So then, we introduce another body called natural experiments. Natural experiments is a method nowadays used quite frequently by social scientists. We will introduce what it is through another example. Okay, so first, let's introduce a randomized control trial, an experiment conducted by social scientists, people in education and education economics, to study the effect of class size on students' academic achievement. Here, academic achievement is measured by the test score, basically a verbal test and the math test. Okay, this is a quite well-known famous experiment. It's called a student-teacher achievement ratio experiment. So the short name is STAR, S-T-A-R, Project STAR. It was conducted in the United States, actually in the States of Tennessee, 1985. It actually lasts several years. So the research question is the effect of class size on students' academic achievement. Or put it more directly, will a reduction in class size improve students' test score? Okay, so what is the problem? What is the problem if we do not conduct experiments? So that means we use some non-experimental data. We collect some data from existing schools. Of course, some schools will have a relatively small class size. Some schools will have a relatively large class size. There are just a group of these schools in two types, right? A small class type group, a big class type, and we compute the average test score from this small class group, and also I compute average test score from this large class group, and I compare these two averages. So what is the potential problem in comparing the averages using non-standard data? So basically, there are two types of concerns. First, in the United States, weaker students are often needed to say group into small classes. So that means, except for class size, besides class size, the students' learning ability are different between small class group and big class group. So this will violate all this fitness requirements. Another requirement is half for x, except for x. The only difference between these two groups is in x. All other factors are on average the same between these two groups. So here y is x or x is class size, either a small class or regular class, or regular means relatively large class. And because in US weaker students are often deliberately grouped into smaller classes, and between small classes and large classes, students' learning ability or students' intelligence is better. Side factor, X is class size. Class size, of course, class size is different between these two groups, because these two groups are made by class size. Other factors, like students' learning ability, students' intelligence, are very different in between these two groups, because of this phenomenon. And secondly, parents with better social economic status, that means parents have more income, higher income families. Okay. Higher income families are more likely to send their children to smaller classes. So if they think that small classes will let their children receive more attention from teachers and so on, so they try to send their children to smaller classes. So this will, again, will also violate our requirements as more factors, except for us, are very the same between these two groups. Now, here are the factors like family level, family income. Because family income also contributes a lot to children's cognitive skill development, like academic performance. Okay. So here, because parents with better social economic status, parents with higher income, are more likely to send their children to small classes, this means other factors such as family background, especially family income, are on average different between small class group and big class group. Okay, so because our non-experimental data have these two problems, they violate this requirement, so this motivates our experiment example, randomized control trial. So, Project STAR, this randomized control trial, was funded by the Tennessee Parliament. The total cost of approximately $12 million, and the experiment lasted for 4 years. So as you can see that, it's costly. Financially costly, and it took a long time, 4 years. The group of students went to Chicago in 85, 86 school year, participate in the experiment through third grade. So that's nice. The 4 years. So from kindergarten to grade one, grade two, grade three. So kindergarten to grade three in total 4 years. So what is the random assignment? Remember, a random assignment is the key that makes sure small class group and regular class group will have the average set except for class. So entering students means students who enter in kindergarten. Entering students are randomly assigned to one of the two types of classes before they enter, before they begin kindergarten. Two types of classes. Small classes means a student-teacher ratio. Student-teacher ratio means the number of students divided by number of teachers. Right? If the student-teacher ratio is large, means the class size is large. If the student-teacher ratio is small, this means the class size is small. Okay? So small class size, usually have 13 to 17 students per teacher. On the other hand, regular class size is about 22, 25. So, those kids, those children, before they started kindergarten, randomly assigned to one of these two types of classes. Students then took reading and math tests at the end of each grade, and at the end of kindergarten, at the end of the first grade, second grade, and third grade, they took reading and math tests. So, there are in total more than 11,000 children involved in this experiment. Again, randomization makes sure that other factors are on average the same between small classes and regular classes. This means if we observe difference in the average test score between the two groups, this difference must come from class size. Because randomization has made sure all other factors are on average the same between these two groups. Then, if we observe that there's a difference in average test score between these two groups, we must attribute it to class size. Because class size is only difference between these rules. All factors are on average same. So this is the power of randomization. So in the sample, I'm comparing this average test score difference, I'm comparing average test score in grade 3, in grade 6, in grade 3, between small class group and regular class group. And you find that the difference in average test score is 5 to 6 percentile points in the 7th and 3rd grade. This difference must come from class size. This difference must be caused by class size. Why? Again, all other factors are on average the same. This is MT by random assignment of students into these rules. So this finding is substantially different from some previous studies, right? Those probably problematic studies suffered from those problems. Previous studies using mass random data suggest that there's little or no link between class size and students' learning. Based on those previous findings, the policy implementation is that school systems can save money by hiring few teachers with no reduction in achievement. So usually, a cost-effect relationship usually has some policy implications. So if we find that class size has no effect on students' performance, then probably the education committee can decide to hire fewer teachers because class size does not matter. Then why don't we save some money on hiring more teachers and we can spend those money on some other things. But the perfect storm is a very good answer, as we described before. The small effect on the test score is about 5 to 6 percentile points in 3rd, 2nd, and 3rd grade. So here we can see that doing a randomized control trial may correct our previous belief regarding the relationship between class size and the student academic performance. So, randomized control trial, which is very powerful in finding out cause-effect relationship, but the drawback is it usually costs a lot of money, like I described. So in 1980s, it was prominent, was quite old, and a long time, 4 years. And some have ethical issues. So in this example, the ethical problem is not that obvious, but still, some parents may complain that, okay, you're using the taxpayer's money, then why was my child assigned to a regular class, but my neighbor's child was assigned to a smaller class? All of us pay relatively the same tax, but it is unfair. It's unfair that you randomly assign my child to smaller, to regular class, but somebody else's child to a smaller class. It's unfair. So there are some ethical issues. Therefore, a much cheaper and more reliable design is called natural experiment. Some people call it quasi experiment, so it means the same thing. So we have several different names, but they all mean the same thing. Natural experiment, quasi experiment. In Japanese, it also has several names. So, basically, natural experiment is not an experiment. It is not an experiment. It uses non-experiment data. Okay? So don't be confused by this word experiment in the same. So basically, natural experiments usually make use of features in policies and institutions to do what? To create scenarios that resemble, that look like randomized control trials. It may sound a little bit abstract, but I'll explain it in an example. So in order to do a natural experiment, actually not do an experiment, analyze the data through a natural experiment design. As I said, natural experiment is not an experiment. So we need to have a background knowledge of policy and institutions. Now we look at an example that uses natural experiment to study the same research question we talked about before using RCT. So that is the relationship between class size and test score.